Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
So you ready for the draft? Let's get started.
This is the Rich Eisen Show.
The Chicago Bears select.
Live from the NFL Draft in Detroit, it's the Rich Eisen Show.
The 2024 NFL Draft is now underway.
Today's guests, NFL Network insider Ian Rappaport, ESPN NFL analyst Dan Orlovsky, Fox Sports college football analyst and NFL Network draft analyst Joel Klatt, Detroit Lions defensive end Aiden Hutchinson, Michigan head coach Sherrone Moore, and now, it's Rich Eisen.
That's right. Welcome to the third and final day of the Rich Eisen Show Draft Week Special, live on the Roku channel from downtown Detroit at the Total by Verizon Studio. Thrilled to have you here with us on the Roku channel, which is free on all Roku devices known to man. Also available on select Samsung smart TVs, Amazon Fire TV, the Roku app, because the Roku channel's on it, therokuchannel.com for all you internet freaks out there maybe sitting at work wanting to check out on what we thought about what went down on the first night of the first ever draft in Detroit with a quarter of a million of our closest friends. It was a lot of fun last night. We say hello to everybody listening on the Rich Eisen Show Terrestrial Radio Network and Sirius XM, Odyssey, Coast to Coast. Also to those who might be checking us out on our podcast through the Cumulus Podcast Network. We're thrilled about that. Good to see you over there, gents. Christopher, how are you?
Rich, I'm great.
Chris Brockman.
Love the Drake.
I'm
in, baby.
Love
Let's
the Drake.
Go.
The Drake Hotel, now setting up shop in New England.
Yeah, buddy.
How are you, TJ Jefferson? Light that candle.
Candle is now lit.
Hey, buddy.
What up, though, Detroit?
How about that, right?
Detroit's been awesome, man.
Right.
That crowd last night,
lit.
Rich, I can only imagine what it was like being there and looking out over the sea of people. You must have felt like a rock star. Just the crowd like that, the energy. City's been amazing. It's been an awesome week in the first round. Lived up to it.
Yeah, I mean, just it was a sea of Honolulu blue, and we'll talk about that throughout this three-hour edition of the show. Ian Rappaport, my NFL Network colleague, is going to join us about what he heard about might have been going on behind the scenes last night and who's still on the board. There's some draft trade talk already throughout this day. I'm wondering what he can fill us in on. And then Dan Orlovsky from the ESPN set, Joel Klatt, who was next to me all night last night, he's going to join us top of hour number two. And then we'll have a parade of Wolverines here on this program. Aiden Hutchinson, who was out on the stage last night with two of his teammates and Eminem and Calvin Johnson and Barry Sanders.
That was amazing.
The commissioner and putting the Bears on the clock. It was great. There was like huge cheers last night for the Lions, and then they put the Bears on the clock for boo.
Immediately boo.
And then the Lions trade up for draft choice. They introduced Terrion Arnold. Huge cheers. And then the Packers went on the clock. Boo. It was just fantastic energy throughout the entire night. And then Sherrone Moore, the head coach of the University of Michigan, is going to be making his way to our studio. We'll hang with him. And then we're going to get you set for night number two and day number three of the NFL draft. Listen, obviously the stories going into this draft all about the quarterbacks, and the draft did not disappoint on that front. It's rare to see the quarterback to general pick population hit rate be at 50%. It went from 100%, then down to 75%. It didn't get below 50% in terms of quarterbacks being drafted compared to the number of picks that had already been made on the draft board until pick seven. We saw an amazing amount of choices at quarterback, three in a row to start, and then pick 8, pick 10, pick 12, all quarterbacks. And that is something that we were expecting to be possible. We've never seen a draft with 4 straight quarterbacks to start. That did not happen in this one, but we've never seen 4 out of the first 8 picks be quarterbacks, 5 of the first 10 picks be quarterbacks, and 6 of the first 12 picks be quarterbacks. We've never seen that before. But the one that stands out amongst all of them, the one that was the least chalky of all of them, was Michael Penix Jr. going to Atlanta. And in terms of that, I have been fortunate to be doing this draft for 21 years with NFL Network. This is my 18th draft, gavel to gavel. And there have been many head scratchers in the NFL draft, but none being more of a universal industry-wide head scratcher than the one that we saw last night, Michael Penix Jr., number 8 overall, going to Atlanta. And let me finish my sentence by saying this. This has nothing to do with Michael Penix Jr.'s abilities. You've heard us talk about this kid out of the Washington program, from the Indiana program to the Washington program. Everything that has gone into making him the man that he is, this has nothing to do with that. I believe he's worthy of a top 10 pick in the NFL draft. We had Kurt Warner, Pro Football Hall of Famer, my colleague from the NFL Media Group, sitting in this chair to my left on this set yesterday. He said he thought that Michael Penix Jr., in his mind, was a better choice at quarterback in this draft than Drake May, which is saying a lot. This has nothing to do with Michael Penix Jr.'s ability and everything to do with what the Atlanta Falcons did in free agency in advance of making this pick. I have no earthly idea why a team would go and sign Kirk Cousins for the amount of money that they did and also run the risk of a tampering charge in the process of doing it and giving this man a generational salary at quarterback over maybe if it's 4 years, the entire contract being 4 years long. We were wondering, would he actually finish this contract in Atlanta? I'll tell you one person who thought he would finish this contract in Atlanta, and his name is Kirk Cousins. This guy is the guy who showed up, starts throwing out first pitches at the Braves game, talks about this is his last stop of his career. I'll tell you what, Atlanta's not going to be the last stop of this man's career, because Michael Penix Jr. being drafted 8th overall and starting the clock of his first quarterback contract in the NFL mandates that he starts at some point in this contract. And he starts at some point in this contract before Kirk Cousins ever imagined another quarterback would be brought in to take his starting role. I have no idea why Atlanta would want to do that with Kirk Cousins coming in the manner in which he came in and the amount of the red carpet that they rolled out for him and the doubt that they're now going to be placing within his mind and that locker room. His ability to stroll in there and say, this is my team, this is my franchise, this is my new city, has now been compromised because they brought this kid in 8th overall. His ability to look at this kid in the face and say, let's talk about what you need to do to become a terrific quarterback in this league. As great a human as Kirk Cousins is and has shown to be, you have to sit there and wonder how he's going to be with this kid in this quarterback room. Another thing to point out here, the doubt that might be in Cousins' mind and anybody else in this locker room that wants to be in the Cousins camp fully and completely has to sit here and wonder, at what point did they fall in love with Michael Penix Jr.? Was it watching him be a collegiate quarterback in Washington? Was it him being a quarterback in the championship game against Michigan, struggling, but also seeing what he did against Texas? We heard, and Ian Rappaport's going to come on here, and I'm wondering if he can confirm this, they did not have a top 30 visit with Michael Penix Jr. They went and chatted with him at the combine and had a 45-minute meeting with him, watching a workout of him in Washington, and that's it. When did they fall in love with Michael Penix? Was it in the process of signing Kirk Cousins to a 4-year, $180 million contract that pays him $90 million of guaranteed money? Did they do that during that after signing him? Tom Pelissero, our buddy Tommy P, who's going to sit in for me when I'm with the Roku New Fronts next week in New York, he had the line of the day on Good Morning Football today. He said it's basically like cheating on your wife during the honeymoon. Is essentially what he said. That's what it is. You're in the honeymoon phase right now, and you're going to bring in a kid who, by the way, is also 24 years old when he takes the field, if he does at all for the Atlanta Falcons this year. So if Cousins plays the 2 years, and they do finally stick out 2 years, by the way, for the $90 million that he's guaranteed to be paid over those 2 years, and they do stick Penix out there, he'll be a 27-year-old guy who's not played much of a snap in the NFL at all. That's how Penix is going to get born into this league. So the question is, what was the thinking of Terry Fontenot, the general manager of the Atlanta Falcons? And he, next to Raheem Morris, in a press conference that was very highly watched last night, had this to say after choosing Michael Penix Jr. eighth overall.
At the end of the day, if you believe in a player at that position, because if we're all sitting here a few years from now, whenever it is, and this guy's playing pretty good for somebody, regardless of the situation, regardless of you sit back and look back, then and we pass him up, you can't do that. If you believe in a quarterback, you have to take him. And if he sits for 4 or 5 years, that's a great problem to have, because we're doing so well at that position. So it's just as simple as if you see a guy that you believe in at that position, you have to take him.
I mean, to wait for 4 or 5 years. And
that was wild.
Well, I think Terry Fontenot is saying that because he does need to address the guy who they paid all this generational money to be a free agent and come in to win now. The sense in Atlanta was, let's win now. And the sense is, when you do that in free agency and you're a quarterback needy team and you're eighth overall on the clock, that now allows you to take the best player available to supplement the arrival of Kirk Cousins, to maybe trade out, to trade down the Dallas Turner selection that everybody had them in their mock drafts. Yeah. Dallas Turner wound up going 17th overall. Minnesota traded up one more time to go get him. He wound up being 17th overall. Byron Murphy, who would have been a very nice addition in the middle of the defensive line for Atlanta to help out win now and win a division right now, if not a Super Bowl right now, he went 16th overall. You could have traded out into those spots. You could have traded out into those spots and gotten those guys and more draft choices in a draft that's very top heavy. I mean, the Buffalo Bills got two more picks in tonight's draft on purpose for that. And we'll discuss the Bills and what they did later on in this program. You could have done that. But he's also saying, we want to win later on. But Michael Penix, if you do wait the 4 years, if you do say wait 4 years, that guy's going to be a 28-year-old quarterback who's not played before, with the possibility of you picking up a fifth-year option of him not having played a single snap. Now then, in terms of making sure that you're winning down the road, the famous website and firm SpotTrack that keeps track of all the finances.
I was just looking at it right
now. Well, they tweeted this out, and I want to put it on the screen so everyone can understand what the Falcons are thinking, that Penix is going to make $16 million over the next two seasons with his slotted contract as he ramps up and learns behind Cousins, who's going to earn $90 million over that span. So that's $100 million, $106 million at the quarterback spot, which is, you know, $50 million a year. That's like Dak, right? That's like Mahomes money. But after that, they've got Michael Penix on a 2-year, $6.8 million guarantee through 2027 with the fifth-year option to boot. Now, that is dirt cheap. And that, however, is going to be the window in which you want to try and win a Super Bowl that they have left, which is the rookie contract. You want to win on a rookie contract right now. That's why that makes no sense to wait the 2 years and bring him in to learn behind Kirk Cousins. The only thing that this could possibly remotely compare to that I have seen in the 21 years was back in the last time, the 21 years of doing the draft, back in the last time the Washington franchise chose a quarterback second overall in 2012. Just like last night, they chose second overall, and they chose a Heisman Trophy winning quarterback in Robert Griffin III. And then a couple of draft choices, draft rounds later, they chose Kirk Cousins. And I remember sitting at the NFL Network draft set in Radio City Music Hall saying, why do that? The only time Kirk Cousins is going to play is if something has gone horribly wrong with your eggs in the basket decision. All eggs in the basket decision with the time at the time is to use the second overall pick on a quarterback. This version of it is to generationally enrich a quarterback further. Why would you go ahead and choose another quarterback when you've just chosen one? And it's amazing to me that the situation now involves Kirk Cousins in the role of being the one supplanted. And it's Michael Penix Jr. being the one brought in to make the quarterback wonder, are all the eggs in my basket or not?
Time is a flat circle.
It's unbelievable. And that is the point to just finish up on the, you know, going through the entire head scratcher here is what does Kirk Cousins think? Because you do have to win now with the guy. You're paying him like you want to win now. You've got to get at least 2 years out of him in win now mode. What is he thinking? Well, last night, the Falcons called him just as they were making this choice to give him a heads up. And both Fontenot and Raheem Morris were asked about that.
This question is for Terry or Raheem, whichever one of you called Kirk when you were on the clock and you tell me about it. What's his reaction?
Well, that's a private. We wouldn't share that, you know. And obviously, we
reactions are pretty private, right?
Yeah.
You know, he got called on the clock, obviously, because it's a sensitive time with the issues of what you got going on. It's never a right time to talk to a quarterback about those things, and reactions are always going to be private when it comes to those things, unless Kirk decides to tell you some of those things, or whatever the case may be. But he's a competitor, just like us all, and you can always expect those things to go just like you kind of think.
Yeah, what were they thinking?
It didn't go well.
It didn't go well because that's
why they're not sharing it. They'll always share. Reactions, when they're positive, will always be shared publicly, as you know. Yeah. So here again, calling him with mere seconds left on the clock or just 2 minutes left on the clock, hey, this is what we're doing, is kind of like when you're paying for the bill at dinner and somebody else makes the reach for their wallet just as you put your credit card down. Okay, let me. I was really going to get this. I'm making the move. It's not reaching for the check. It's reaching for the wallet.
It's just like, oh, you got it.
Nice try. Okay. I appreciate you acknowledging. But what does it do me? You know, you're not putting your credit card down in time. So again, I just to sum up. Biggest head scratcher I've seen in 21 years of doing this draft. Does it mean the Falcons can't win the Super Bowl in the next 2 years with Kirk Cousins? Absolutely not. Does it mean that they won't win the Super Bowl with Michael Penix Jr. when he gets out there? Absolutely not. Does this mean Michael Penix Jr. doesn't deserve to be the 8th overall pick in the NFL draft? Absolutely not. Does it mean that he deserved to be born into the NFL this way?
He also might play week one. We don't know if Kirk Cousins is ready to go. Also, there have been 130 quarterbacks who played games in the last 2 years.
But you also don't sign a quarterback to the contract that they did if you're questioning whether he's going to play week one. He's going to play week one. They expected the whole conversation this entire 6 weeks was like Kirk Cousins has arrived. Atlanta's on the map. They are absolutely in the mix to win their division, if not the conference. And we'll see what they're going to do to supplement them with the 8th overall pick. And they didn't. And all they did was just add a lot of questions and a conversation like this one to start this show, which is a head scratcher headline. I'm scratching my head.
I see.
So we'll talk about it all throughout this edition of the Rich Eisen Show, starting with the man who just sat on the couch, my buddy, the Rap Sheet man himself, at Rap Sheet on Twitter, the must follow, and my buddy Ian Rappaport here on the Rich Eisen Show, fresh off of last night's stuff, and the man who told us before the pick was in, this could be Penix. Don't be surprised. I was.
It's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Our house is a mess. Come on in. I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian and host of your new favorite podcast, fly on the wall.
Okay, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband.
And co-host, Benjamin Wallen.
Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid alive.
Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen.
Back here in Detroit, I'm sitting at the Rich Eisen Show desk on the Rich Eisen Show Radio Network. Its desk is furnished by Grainger with supplies and solutions for every industry. Grainger has the right product for you. Call clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Rap Sheet checking out his phone. People texting you right now? What are they texting you right now?
They want to know what's going on with the 49ers receivers and who's going early tonight.
Okay, so let's jump in first on the Falcons.
Okay,
and because you were telling all of us for the last few days, Penix Jr.'s in play at 8, and then it's the Falcons pick, and they get in my ear saying, "Let's go to Ian," and I say, "All right, Ian," and you're like, "I'm telling you guys, like one last time, yeah. Michael Penix Jr. is, I think you said, very much in play for the 8th overall pick in the draft."
You hear so many rumors leading up to the draft, and this one would just not go away. And I had heard that they took a trip. Look, if you're going to do a fake out, right, then it's a long fake out to go from Atlanta to Washington. Like, I don't know if you can get further.
Right.
Right? So they went and met with him and did the whole thing.
But he never visited top 30 there? Is that?
Never visited. But I don't know why you would. Like, if you're going to go out and meet with him, like, that's... that's enough, right?
Okay.
And then there's always the fear that, like, someone finds out about the top 30, they go, oh, maybe the Falcons take them, and then it's like someone trades up over them. So, like, you got to do your homework, but you have to be careful that someone doesn't jump you, right? Like,
right.
So I hear this rumor. I talk to some people. I'm like, all right, I'll say it on the pregame show, and I felt good about it, but, God, you just never know, like, is someone really going to do it? And then I got another call kind of further explaining why Penix makes sense right before the pick. And I'm like, oh, my God, it has to be him.
So why does it make sense? Make sense of it.
It makes sense because there's nothing more important than the quarterback. And, like, could they have taken an edge rusher who I think would have been Dallas Turner? Yeah. They could have taken Byron Murphy. Yes. Very important players. Nothing's as important as a quarterback.
But didn't they just already fill that need?
Yeah, yeah.
With a very enriching contract for a veteran that brings a certain sense of excellence to their franchise?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I think here's how I see it.
Okay.
Kirk Cousins made them whole and normal. They have a good roster. He is a legitimate starting quarterback. Wherever you think he ranks, like 10th or 15th, or I have no idea, wherever people think Kirk Cousins is, okay? Legitimate, good starting quarterback, makes him a good team, makes him a playoff contender. That is basically a two-year proposition, okay? It's a four-year contract, but guaranteed money is 2 years. So then it's like, if you can make sure, and this was a battle for them to replace Matt Ryan with someone who's good and capable, and it cost them $100 million at least. So if you can say for, you know, not this year, not next year, you have a very good backup for the next couple of years, fine. But, and if something happens, you have a starter. But let's say from 2 years from now till 12 years from now, you're done. You got a guy. You don't have to worry about it. You're just good. To me, that's worth everything. It's the same argument I would make with the Packers when people would be like, they needed a weapon. Why would they take a quarterback? I'm like, nothing matters if you don't have a quarterback. So I understand the pick. I like the pick. Might it help them zero this year? It might. Best case scenario, it helps them zero this year. That is okay.
The thing I just don't understand is that when you sign a quarterback for a four-year deal, even if it's 2 years of real money,
right,
fine, you do that, then you've taken care of business for your quarterback position to try and win a Super Bowl right here and right now. Nobody, when he was signed, was saying, well, but what about 2027? What about 2028? That's not the way you do things in the NFL if you want to win right here and right now. You're not worrying about that. Like, that would have been like the Jets taking J.J. McCarthy at 10.
Actually,
you know, where Aaron Rodgers
is, you know, 2 years to go, 3 years to go, coming off an Achilles, just like Kirk Cousins. We need to get somebody at 10 right now who's going to be playing for the next, you know, 12 years.
I like the argument.
And that, to me, I even said that from this, and I love J.J. I want J.J. McCarthy to play for my team for the rest of my life based on what just happened this past year. And I thought that made no sense.
I think it makes sense. I would not. I
you
don't,
would have taken J.J. McCarthy if you're Rodgers coming back. He's Achilles heel.
If I believe,
thanks for coming back, Aaron. Here's a kid who's going to take your job, and that's what Atlanta just did.
By the way, they did Cousins. Well, Green Bay did that, and he won back-to-back MVPs.
Well, right. So there's always the chance that Jets didn't do it, obviously, but there's always the chance that Rodgers gives them the finger, as he did in Green Bay, and goes, "Cool, you take that guy. Great. He'll sit. He'll watch me. I'm going to be an MVP." I actually thought Kirk Cousins might kind of do the same thing. You want to take that guy? Let's have him watch me for 2 years. Like the Rodgers reaction, which was, you know, the ultimate double bird, probably made him a better player. Maybe this makes Cousins a better player. But here's the other thing. I don't care about any of that because the Packers are set up for the next 10 years now. And like, I don't know where the Jets had J.J. McCarthy, and I don't really get the sense they seriously considered him or Penix or any of the other guys. But I don't hate the argument because think about what it costs to get Rodgers. Second-round pick, a ton of money. Like,
what a head-scratcher. I hear you, and I totally know what it's like roster building and money-wise and the back end of the contract, $6.8 million over the last 2 years leading into a fifth-year option for a starting quarterback in the NFL.
It's that pretty good.
That is chump change. I mean, and Michael Penix Jr. is no chump, you know. But all right, we'll see. You mentioned Ian Rapoport here on the Rich Eisen Show, the 49ers wide receiver situation.
Yes.
What can you tell me about what almost happened last night and what still is in play going into tonight?
Yeah, that was a fun one last night. That was another one where, like, you know, I'm pitching my topics on air, and I'm kind of like, all right, this is going to be interesting if the 49ers take a receiver. And, like, I kind of thought they were going to take a tackle. And then I'm like, I guess there's a chance they take one. And I was surprised that it was Pierce. I think a lot of people had him in the second round. Kyle's a very good scout. I think he knows offensive skill players, so I will trust him. But I was a little surprised he went that early.
Well, he said Ayuk even texted him to say that was a fire pick. So
they were teammates, weren't they?
Yeah, Arizona State.
Arizona State,
because he transferred to Florida from Arizona State.
Yes.
And, you know, into the SEC from Arizona State, just like Jaden Daniels. But so were they close to trading Ayuk last night or Debo? Is Debo in play at all?
So I don't get the sense that they were close to trading Ayuk last night. I think they would have done it maybe for a one, but it kind of feels like this is not, I wouldn't say this is like reporting. This is more just my general feel of the situation.
Sure.
It feels more like there's a little bit of a push to keep Ayuk now. And could Debo be had? Like, maybe, you know? I think if you're, you know, Brandon Ayuk is a very good player. I think they have made offers out to him to pay him like a very well-compensated receiver. It's not there yet, and the market has gone up, as we learned last night right before the draft and several other times this week.
With A.J. Brown.
Yeah, and then the Amon-Ra deal, I think, helped Ayuk's market. Mm-hmm. But keep your young, good players, and if you know, Debo's got 2 years left. He's already been paid once. Teams might be interested. Like, I could see it.
That Debo could be the one traded tonight.
Maybe, yeah. I know it's hard to do, because you want to get a guy physical. And so, like, you know, worst case scenario is, let's say the 49ers trade him tonight on the clock for a third rounder or something, and then God forbid he fails a physical.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're like, they already used the pick. So it's hard to do. Could you agree on it? It's a challenge. Like, there was a, do you remember when Hollywood Brown got traded to the Cardinals, and it was broken on the clock?
Mm-hmm.
He was already in Arizona having taken a physical, and he literally showed up at their draft party being like, I'm here, but the deal was done because his physical was done. So it's a challenge. It really
so we
is.
Need to look at doctors in certain towns that are looking at a D, Samuel?
Yeah. I thought you were going to say D, Bo. That would
That would be wild if something like that happens tonight. What's Bills fans want to know what's up, And I think they're more concerned with the fact that they actually let the Chiefs jump them. And if Xavier Worthy beats them in a division game or a conference final or something like that, that would be quite something. But
I get it.
What's the Bills' philosophy by trading down with the Chiefs and then out?
Yeah, it's funny. Like, I was thinking about this because it's like, oh, man, like I can't believe the Bills, you know, let the Chiefs take this receiver. And then it's like, well, it's not like the Bills made the Chiefs good. Like, Chiefs are already good. They won the Super Bowl. They're pretty good. You know, now did they make them better? Like, maybe. But, you know, the Bills are in a weird spot. It feels like a reset year. It feels like a collect picks and cheap assets year and use as many picks as you can. So the Bills, I tweeted it earlier and I'm going to mess it up now, but in one of their trades, they gained 30 places. It was a pick swaps. And then in another one of the trades, they gained 59 or something like that. And that's pretty good. Like, that's really, so, you know, I assume the Bills like Xavier Worthy. I think most people had him as a first rounder, kind of around where he was taken. I think the Bills might have taken a receiver at 32, where the Panthers came up and flopped with them. I don't know they would have taken the guy the Panthers took, but my guess is
the guy the Panthers took, as Daniel Jeremiah said last night, told the world that the Panthers told me.
I could not believe
that. Xavier Leggett was telling everybody the Panthers told me they're going to take me with the first pick of the second night. And
you know they were cringing when he said that. Like, come on, bro.
Yeah, I know. And
we told you that in confidence.
Canales' response to try and cover those tracks was just like, well, we told 50 players the same thing.
Nah.
But then they traded up to get the kid and get a fifth-year option on him as well. Yeah. So the Bills trading out. Is it possible the Bills are traded out because they gave themselves an entire evening and day to try and pry Debo or Ayuk loose from San Francisco?
You know, I didn't get that sense, no. I don't know if they have the cap space. They only have like $3 million in cap space, and Debo's making like $12 million, something like that. So you got to, I mean, he's making more than that, but I think that's his cap hit. I'd have to look it up. You got to be able to absorb. Yeah, you got to be able to absorb it. So, like, I don't know that they could do it. I guess you can do anything, but I don't get that sense. I get the sense they would like to find their own Debo Samuel or their own, you know, let's say it's a receiver, to get their own. I mean, that's, you know, again, like, this feels like a reset year. But there's nothing wrong with for Brandon Bean and the Bills to be like, you know, that deal made sense to them. Let's take a day. Maybe someone offers us more. Maybe, I mean, the 33rd pick doesn't get traded a ton, but maybe someone offers us something we can't refuse, so take a deep breath, get the assets, take a day.
Before I let you go, what are you expecting tonight? Crystal ball. What do you have?
I'll be watching some, see if we'll have some trades. I don't think very many quarterbacks.
Okay.
I would say
run on who? Running backs?
We'll get some running backs. I mean, there's going to be running backs and receivers.
Okay.
Maybe, I mean, you know, there's some defensive guys still on the board. Yeah. Kool-Aid, Cooper DeJean. There's some guys.
Okay.
Yeah.
Patriots wide receiver?
No. I don't know. I could see what you're – who cares? wow. Hold on a second.
You've got to get better on defense, too.
No. I know the look of an information man. Like, you're about to say something and then didn't want to because you're not as comfortable about sharing that. Did that moment just happen with you right there?
Yeah. I mean
– like, I was about to say this, but I can't. I don't know if I should.
Well, this
is
the problem with coming on shows like this is you feel like we're just having a conversation in your living room.
Yeah.
So it's like sharing, and then it's like – well, I mean, that's not ready
use
for
it on
print
a reel yet. On Instagram or anything like that. But go ahead.
Yeah, no, I'm damn good.
He almost did it. I saw it.
Should have given me some bourbon.
I'll see you. Well, that's
we'll
later
know
tonight.
Better next time.
Good to see you. Good to see you, brother.
Good to
Thank
see you.
You.
Thanks, man.
Look who's joining us. Look who looks all snazzy, getting ready for ESPN. Good to see you, Dan Orlovsky.
Looking forward to seeing him at a Connecticut golf course soon.
All right, fantastic. That's next. This is the Rich Eisen Show. Dan Orlovsky here on our program here in Detroit.
You come to Connecticut for golf?
I go all the time. I play golf.
America starts the day with America in the morning.
First of three pushes of storminess.
Hi, I'm John Trout, your host for the latest news, politics, entertainment, business, and weather.
A speech with political overtones.
Our staff of correspondents provide a fast-paced look at the world with specialized reports from where news happens.
The judge's decision was based on finding there is a
likelihood. So far, the central bank appears to be threading that.
Concise, accurate, and fresh each day.
America in the morning, the podcast, available wherever you listen.
Dan Orlovsky here on the Rich Eisen Show as we're back with a radio audience with our Roku channel live stream right here from Detroit. I'll just throw in your lap. I saw your video last night after the Falcons drafted Michael Penix Jr. What are your two cents on it?
When it happened, completely perplexed. You know, I was sitting here trying to make sense of it, and I couldn't. And then, obviously, I went to bed, and I had a couple conversations about it this morning. And
with who? With others from Atlanta? Did they reach out to you?
They didn't reach out to me, no. Okay. No. And, right. But I just, like, you know, I sent, like, this emoji eyes to, you know, a couple people, and they're like, go ahead, ask it, you know? And I was like, okay, why? And when it was laid out to me, totally made sense. And then I started to think about that information. I was like, I actually like the decision. Okay, so couple of things, and I've shared this, but number one, they had Michael Penix as the number two quarterback in the draft, top four player. He was neck and neck with Jaden Daniels for them, so they valued the player. Number two, they realize and expect that, I mean, this is a team that won seven games last year with pretty darn poor quarterback play. They think they're going to be pretty good with Kirk over the next couple of years, so they don't believe that when that time comes to go get that next guy, it's going to be as easy as, like, even myself thinks it is to get up in the draft, you know, to go get a guy that you really believe is that talented of a quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
And the third thing was they went out for a private workout with Michael, and they said 50 degrees, windy day, and everyone thought they were inside watching him throw the football. And they said,
I saw him too throw the football. Like, and again, going all in on criticizing the pick, as I guess I did to start this program. And not Jerry Jones all in. Like, I literally went all in.
It was like De Niro, you disrespect a little bit.
You know, I didn't disrespect.
I prefaced it by
saying this is nothing to do with Penix's ability.
Right.
Or rightful top 10 pick in this draft.
Sure.
It has nothing to do with that. I mean, the kid throws it. He's unbelievable.
Right.
It's just that then why are you paying Cousins $100 million? Like, why are we doing that? My guess is that they... And then let him throw out a first pitch at the Braves game and talk about, I'm going to retire here.
Right.
And they clearly have other plans on that front.
Well, my guess is that there was no really, I get, you know, this is part of how the NFL calendar works. Like, free agency, teams go from the season to free agency, right? And I would imagine. And so, like, free agency happens. We have to figure out the quarterback situation. Who do we go after? All right, so we're going to go and sign Kirk Cousins. And then you transition to the draft. Again, I've never built a team, but this is my assumption of the chronological order of how it goes. And then you start to do your due diligence on these prospects, and you get this quarterback, and you're like, man, we're kind of intrigued with them. We pick eight, and then you have this workout, and he throws the ball as good as anybody but Matthew Stafford, in their words, as far as people that have been around a guy like that. And you sit there, and I'm Rich, if we think about the three most important people in the conversation, okay, the owner has been searching for the quarterback since Matt Ryan left, or Matt Ryan retired. So then you're sitting there as the owner going, I don't want to be in this anymore. And then the head coach, Raheem Morris, just was a part of the Rams and going, okay, if you don't have a quarterback, like, you can't win. And the general manager, Terry Fontenot, was in New Orleans when they didn't have the plan for what they were going to do post Drew Brees. And they were miring in, like, what's the guy? Who's the guy next? So I think, like, the vision of looking forward, I understand. I do. I see both parts of the argument and the conversation. But when someone sits there and says, like, this guy we thought so highly of that we, if we were at two, you know, Jaden Daniels goes at two, like, we thought they were that same type of quarterback. I understand it. I do. And I think it's smart because we have so many teams, and they realized they weren't going to be able to get up in the future. Like, they just honest, you know, like, Raheem came from the Rams, right? What have the Rams done for years with their number one pick? Get rid of it, because it's pointless. It's eventually, and I think that's what they envisioned what their next couple of years with Kirk is going to be, is they're going to be picking late in the first round.
I just find it, again, just mystifying that you go in free agency and you do what you do in free agency and you pay the quarterback what you're paying him in free agency. And right. I understand the 2 years are the 2 years. And after that, who knows? And, you know, the hoopla is so significant. He talks about, I'm going to retire here. And the entire time he's talking about retiring here and throwing out a pitch at the Braves game, they're pounding the pavement on his replacement.
Yeah.
And that is a wild way to build a team and try and win now for the team that is set to win now. And that's a locker room is going to have to deal with it. And obviously Raheem Morris, that's what he can do. And he's outstanding at dealing with personalities and figuring all that out. It's just a weird way of going into the two seasons of saying, hey, we're all in on you. We need you to win right now. We'd love to win right now. We think we can win right now. But the clock's ticking.
But it's isn't that how already. Always how it is when this situation presents itself? It's always weird. Like when they took Aaron and had Brett, it was weird. And then when they took Jordan and had Aaron, it was weird. When they took Patrick and had Alex, it was kind of weird. They were just coming off of a playoff run. I believe Buffalo had went to the playoffs with Tyrod Taylor when they took Josh. So that was a little maybe not as weird. And the money, I understand, is different. I think that philosophically, hearing, I guess, the thought process and the vision of it all, I understand why Atlanta did what it did. And we can also pretty comfortably say they don't have to worry or think about quarterback until like 2030.
I hear you. I guess what you're saying is the awkwardness of the 2-3 year period of the I guess, overlap. Is nothing compared to the 10 years of championship bliss that the Packers are hoping that they're entering right now with Jordan Love.
Right.
The Bills, we're not talking about the awkwardness between Tyrod Taylor and Josh Allen whatsoever.
Right.
I hear you. I'm shocked by it, and I'm still just head scratching over it. But I'm appreciative of you, I guess, giving us your sort of journey on the subject matter here, Dan Orlovsky. On the Rich Eisen Show, Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, Drake May. You're full agreement with those choices?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. I thought from the jump I would have gone Jaden number one. It wasn't like Jaden one, and then Caleb. It was a very clear, hey, like it was a preference because I've seen the development out of Jaden Daniels, and I've seen the consistency out of Jaden Daniels, and I think the pocket, the patience and peace and movement I liked a little bit more, but I'm a massive Caleb Williams fan. I think he's obviously physically talented. I think the two things for Caleb, you know, Chicago I would put as like a top 6 or 7 skill group now, you know, with the addition of Romo Odunze. Is Caleb going to be willing to constantly hit singles? He's going to have to go on that journey. My guess would be yes, because of the maturity and the awareness. The Notre Dame game, everyone continues to say, like, why do you harp on one game? The Notre Dame game, if you looked at the way that Notre Dame played against USC last year, it was NFL style of defenses. It was NFL style of fronts. It was NFL style of coverages. It was NFL style of show one picture pre-snap and show another. Caleb really struggled. And so he's going to have to really learn from that. He's going to have to grow from that and realize like that's going to be, you know, the consistent stuff that he's going to see in the NFL. Again, highly intellectual kid, highly motivated kid. I think he's going to be a star. Jaden in Washington, again, goes into a pretty good spot because the skill position places. It'll be fascinating to watch how Cliff Kingsbury builds the offense around him because I don't think you just run the same stuff you did with Kyler. He's a different type of player, different type of passer. Jaden is than Kyler. And then Drake, it was the place that I felt most comfortable for Drake May to go.
Why?
New England has no business trying to win right now. And because Jacoby Brissett is there, there's no rush to get Drake May on the field. He's an unbelievable physical talent. If you put a kid who's physically talented but mechanically flawed out there too early, you ruin them, more than likely, especially in New England, where worst pass protecting offensive line in the NFL last year, their leading rusher ran for 640, their leading receiver at 560. You're going to die as a rookie quarterback in New England, unless you're like out of this world. And I don't think Drake is there just yet. And I think if New England stays patient and allows him to sit and grow and develop the, you know, get through the flaw and work on the flaw so it's no longer the talking point, New England's a really good place for him in 2025, 2026.
Fair to say J.J. McCarthy wound up in the perfect spot?
I think you can make the case that J.J. McCarthy is in the best spot we've seen a rookie quarterback going offensive-wise in a long time. And I just said this about Caleb. I think Caleb goes into the best overall situation for number one quarterback. But you're talking about a guy that, one, is going to play in a scheme that always props quarterbacks up. It just does. It makes them play greater than their physical talent. Two, that scheme is married with a play caller that I think Kevin O'Connell's got himself into the conversation for one of the, you know, top six, seven play callers we have in the NFL. And then Justin Jefferson and Addison and Hockenson and Aaron Jones and a top eight offensive line. That's so rare for a rookie quarterback to go into. And, you know, when you look at what J.J. does best, he's phenomenal in the play-action pass game. He was top, I think, eight or nine in all the play-action pass stuff in college football last year. Minnesota ran it at the third most in the NFL last year. So just taking players really good at this, team wants to do this, bang. It's a tremendous place. I've said this, Rich. I think after last night, I would go neck and neck. Favorite for offensive rookie of the year would be J.J. or Caleb.
Really? You put J.J. McCarthy in that conversation?
Yeah. I think it's that good of a place, and I think he is physically a much better player than people expect.
Well, I'm not going to get any argument from – you're not going to get any argument from me on that front. Six quarterbacks taken in the first 12 picks. The number of those six that are going to start this fall would be what?
Your best guess. Start meaningful games?
Start meaningful games.
Okay.
Aren't all games meaningful?
I mean, no, you know, it's like
in the NFL.
Yeah.
Every rep is sacred.
Consequential games,
Dan.
Maybe. So I think that the top two start pretty quickly. If not day one, I'd be surprised if both Caleb and Jaden don't. I think J.J. McCarthy's got a really good chance to be their starter week one. Even though I love Sam Darnold, I just think J.J. is going to have a really good chance to. J.J.'s going to play this year. Bo Nix will start. I'd be shocked if he doesn't. I would be concerned with Drake May starting just strictly because I don't want his talent to go away. If you told me he was going to start a little bit in December, I'd be okay with it. I don't think Michael Penix starts this year unless Kirk, for some reason, has an issue with his rehab and the injury, and I don't anticipate that.
Which is, again, the head scratcher because he's one. Could you say he's the most pro ready? You could make an argument.
Yeah, you can make the argument.
You can make the argument in terms of processing, the way he throws the ball. I mean, but I
never get into pro ready. I never understand that. Like I who cares if you're that pro ready? Who's going to be really good for 10 years? I think is like the more important thing.
Sure. But you just pointed out with Drake May, it's important how you're birthed into the league to make sure you get to those 10 years.
Totally.
Because you can get screwed up.
Totally.
That's, you know, so I guess that's the whole equation. So you'll go, what, four out of the six?
Yeah.
Start a consequential game.
Yeah, like meaningful games for sure, yes. And then Drake maybe at the back end of the year is very similar to, like, you know, what happened, you know, with Patrick's first year. Okay. Obviously Jordan played, but that was because of injury more.
Was it COVID? I think it was a COVID situation. Yeah.
Yep. But I that would be the one that I would sit there and just be like, I don't want to ruin this young man.
Brother, thanks for coming on, man.
Pleasure, always.
Yeah. Dan Orlovsky here, wrapping up hour number one. Hour number two is going to start with that man that just settled into our couch on our green room.
He's the best.
What's up, Dano?
His name is Joel Klatt. We were hanging out all night last night. We're going to hang out top of hour number two. Still have about 90 seconds left here. But yeah, Joel, I got two quarterbacks. Hey, right?
We found the one, Rich. Together. We found the one that likes the Penix pick.
We did.
We found the one.
See?
Uh-oh. There's always one. Teaser.
That's nobody. You had to come around on it.
He did.
People from Atlanta were like, this is what we're thinking. You asked what was going on, huh?
Yeah, I reached out and
are you scheduled to do an Atlanta game week one?
No.
The schedule's coming out.
I understand
weeks.
It. Like I understand it. I also was a fan of the Jordan Love pick when it happened. I get it that they're different situations, but I believe that so often we get these young, talented quarterbacks and they don't survive or they're not successful, and it's not necessarily mainly because of them. And this is a good place for a quarterback that, and his age, sure, but like there's also COVID in the conversation, you know? So You know, him, Jaden, and Bo are older because of COVID.
And I guess this is a perfect time to announce that the second Monday night game of week two is Atlanta hosting, and Dan Orlovsky will be in the booth. I've just been told. No.
I love it. I love it.
It's Atlanta,
Dan, you're
versus
the best.
Green Bay.
You're the best.
Just kidding. No, but I understand what is the rationale. It's just, it's wild. It's going to take me a little bit more than just an overnight to buy it.
Yeah.
But that said, I totally understand what you're saying. You're heading off to work right now?
I'm going to McAfee show right now.
Oh, fantastic. Tell Pat I said hi, will
you,
please?
And then, live for 2 to 4, and then Sports Center, and then on a plane home.
Give my best to Mad Mel. All right, Joel Klatt coming up.
The Rolling Stone Music Now podcast gets inside the biggest stories with Rolling Stone senior writer Brian Hyatt.
Now here is my conversation with Jacob Knoll. Your story is an amazing one, and obviously you lost your dad when you're only 1 year old.
It was definitely a screwy way to grow up. I think that a lot of people never heard of who I am, and then they see me join this band and they must think this kid must have just been handed everything, or nepotism kid. It's a gift that I have an opportunity to sing in such a big band like my father and my uncle's band, Sublime.
Rolling Stone Music Now, wherever you listen.